We are number one, but not in a good way. California is the top target for cybercrime. We lead the nation when it comes to victims of internet crimes. California also has the highest amount of financial losses suffered as a result of things like identity fraud. All this according to a new report by California's Attorney General Kamala Harris. Her office will be releasing the full report later this morning. For more on this topic, we're joined now by Jeremy Matz. He's a former federal prosecutor with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, and he's now on the faculty at USC's Law School. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
We're still awaiting details from this full report, but does it surprise you to hear that the takeaway here that California is the top target for cybercrime?
No, it's not surprising at all. There are a number of factors, I think, that play into that. One, of course, is our population, the biggest in the nation. Other factors include things such as a very high concentration of wealth in this state, including among high net worth individuals and businesses. And in addition, of course, you have Silicon Valley and all of the amazingly productive and wealthy high tech companies located in this state. So all these factors coming together make for a perfect storm of potential victims of identity theft and cybercrime.
Can you talk a little bit more about that last factor? I mean, you would think with the Silicon Valley being here, all the tech innovation going on, that we'd be the number one state in terms of defending ourselves from internet crime, but obviously not.
Obviously not. That's correct. We, in some ways, the cyber criminals seem to many times be one step ahead of law enforcement and also one step ahead of the very high-tech victims that they often target. And in many ways, cybercrime is a game of cat and mouse. And I think that the authorities and the victims working with the authorities are making significant improvements in being able to defend themselves and being able to prosecute this type of crime when it happens. But these hackers, as we've seen, are incredibly sophisticated, and many of them are based in foreign countries. And a lot of the time, it's very hard to identify them and track them down and then punish them when they are located.
Do you have any sense of where most of these cyber attacks are coming from?
I think that the authorities do have a pretty good sense of that, certainly in terms of nations. There are certain nations in Eastern Europe that seem to be a hotbed of this kind of activity, Ukraine, Russia, and some of those other Eastern European countries. There are also a lot of this cybercrime activity originating in East Asia, especially in China. And so that's, I think, where the authorities are focusing many of their efforts these days.
I've read Africa as well. Is that correct?
Africa as well. That's correct. Nigeria has long been a center for various types of fraud. In the past, we used to see more Nigerian fraud, not so much true cybercrime, so to speak, but rather just Ponzi schemes and fraud targeting victims, especially in what they call advanced fee schemes and things of this nature. And now I think that Nigeria is becoming itself a center for increasingly sophisticated cybercrime.
As we mentioned, this report finds that California ranks number one when it comes to the amount of financial losses suffered as a result of internet crimes. Do you have any sense of just how big a toll these crimes are taking on us financially? And can you break down some of those costs for us?
I think there's no question that it's in the many hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars. This is a type of crime, and the consequences of this type of crime, being cybercrime, are very hard to quantify with precision, because much of it is either undetected, or when it is detected, it can be very difficult for the authorities to really get a handle on exactly how bad the losses are. I think that one example of that is the recent Target breach that we've seen at Target stores, where the number of victims and the amount of the corresponding losses seem to be increasing on an almost daily basis when the news of the hack initially broke. And so it's very hard to quantify this with precision, but there's no question that it's in the hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars.
There's probably no surprise here, but this study found that we're also especially vulnerable here in California to theft of intellectual property, given this is where Hollywood is. They, of course, you know, we're producing a lot of content here. There have been plenty of campaigns that we've seen over the years working against piracy. Can you give us a sense of how successful they've been?
I can try, certainly. I think that those campaigns by law enforcement are increasingly successful. At the U.S. Attorney's offices in this state, including in Los Angeles and in San Francisco, there are now dedicated units which specialize in prosecuting not only cybercrime but also intellectual property cases. They are working increasingly closely with the victims of those cases, in particular movie studios, video game manufacturers, creators of content and software, as you mentioned, And those victims typically have their own very sophisticated counsel, in-house counsel, and the ability to hire private counsel as well. And so all of these players on the enforcement side are beginning to work more and more closely together. And that includes actually efforts to reach out to their foreign counterparts in other countries where piracy is often rampant, in particular in Asia and South America, in those kinds of countries. And we're seeing increasing joint efforts on the part of multinational law enforcement authorities to combat this sort of piracy.
This report estimates that more than $30 billion, with a B, dollars is laundered through California's economy each year, and that some of this goes through virtual currencies like Bitcoin. Jeremy, can you talk a little bit about the role of virtual currencies in the world of cybercrime?
Certainly. The role of those currencies, unfortunately for the proponents of the currencies for legitimate uses, the role of those currencies in illegitimate activities is high and has been since really the origination of those Bitcoin and similar types of monetary instruments. This is you're talking about a type of a monetary instrument which by its very nature is unregulated, and it's not government sponsored, it's not government created, and that makes it in a sense a prime vehicle for criminals of various types to use in order to try to profit from their activities and also launder the money that they gain from their activities. A very good example of that, of course, is the Silk Road case that we've heard about recently, where the transactions on that website, which essentially just sold all sorts of contraband and drugs and illegal products, those transactions were done, to my knowledge, entirely in Bitcoin.
I mean, your experience as a federal prosecutor, you worked on cybercrime cases. Today, Attorney General Kamala Harris will be calling for more tools to combat cybercrime. I'm curious how federal law compares with what can be done here in a state like California.
Sure. The federal law, on the one hand, is very, very broad and sweeping, and the fraud statutes that are on the books on the federal side and the cybercrime statutes that are on the books on the federal side have very broad reach in general. On the other hand, by necessity and by constitutional requirements, those statutes require some sort of a federal nexus or a federal jurisdictional element, you might say. So typically, that kind of element is met by cross-state activity, interstate activity, or international activity. In the case of cybercrime, it can also be met by showing that the computer system in question has an interstate or an international aspect to it or nexus to it, but those are required elements typically under the federal statutes, and so there can sometimes be gaps in the ability of the federal authorities to enforce those statutes if you have activity that is entirely located within a single state and which really does not touch on interstate or international boundaries, and so. For those kinds of reasons, I think that increased state regulation, increased state statutes that would target this activity and corresponding increased state enforcement could be very, very effective in getting at a certain level of the problem that perhaps the federal authorities aren't always able to get at.
Jeremy Matz of USC's Law School, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.